think we can mosh while you're sitting in an office chair?
Like, you're strapped to
like
an
everybody
chair?
Gets in an office chair in a mosh pit and just kicks themselves around. It's almost like bumper cars, but
yeah, maybe
moshing to Limp Bizkit's Rolling.
Yeah, probably, right? If you're in like a skating ring or something and you can use the walls to like fucking push off and yeah.
We're listening to Rolling right now.
Rolling, but the bomb.
Good old copyright music. Look at that intuitive timing cutting Whoa. Back to it. Nobody knows what the hell I'm saying though, because it doesn't sound like anything's amiss.
Welcome to New Day, New Movie.
The podcast where we watch 365 movies in 365 days.
I'm Mitch.
I'm Scott.
And that was the most normal intro I think we've done in a while.
Bam.
Rolling. Welcome to week 15.
There's our cease and desist. Yes, week 15.
I did the math.
Yeah.
I was just curious to kind of see where we were at.
Yeah.
11,207 minutes of movie watching, or roughly 187 hours.
I don't like that. Take it back.
Take it back. All right. Rewind.
Oh, shit. Yeah, week 15. It's getting rough. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, man. It seems like life's getting busier. And we keep saying it, but
yeah,
it's getting harder. It's
we
not,
think we've hit a...
We're on the downhill right now.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Yeah, I went to look at my notes, and unfortunately, I didn't take very good notes while watching the movies this week. So I don't know what I wrote for some of them, so I hope that it comes out okay, because I'm just going to read them blindly. Because I don't remember any of these fucking movies.
And I would say, to be fair, I mean, there was maybe a few standouts for me, but overall, I'd say a lot of these.
Oh, know, there's they just... whiskey in my tea. Fuck.
Oh, yeah, that's a face. I don't know. Man. It was an interesting week of movies for sure, and I was definitely caught off guard by some of them, but I was also pleasantly surprised by some of them. So I think that's
really
that's good, and I'm glad we
can't wait to find out which ones you were pleasantly surprised by.
All right,
it was Geostorm, wasn't it?
I don't. There might just be a like a.
It's making me cough.
He's crying now, having watched that movie.
I wish that we could take that back.
Yeah, that's a part of those minutes I was telling you about.
Yeah, never getting those. They're gone.
They're gone. Oh, man. So you say you're getting busy. You doing okay?
Yeah, no, I'm living the dream.
You do what you got to do, right? Yeah. That's kind of how it is. Like,
yeah.
We're getting by.
Yeah, speaking of... Anyone who has noticed that the release schedule for the episodes in the past couple of weeks have been really fucked up, I apologize, and it should...
Get a phone call.
What the fuck, bro? Turn your phone off.
It is off.
It's recording time.
It might be my parentals. No, it's Kerrigan. She's on the podcast next week.
Well, now we're back after Mitch so rudely interrupted our recording session by not putting his phone on... off.
Sorry, mode. Everyone. Yeah. On silent? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, but then it vibrated, so it was on silent. Look, man.
Let's just say we're 15 weeks in. We're kind of losing our minds a little bit, I think.
Yeah. I definitely think we're at a lunacy point.
Yeah. This is a pinnacle point in the podcast. And listen to all those P's. And if you didn't know...
Pinnacle point in the podcast.
Yeah. P's and S's just have a different, you know, they're built different.
Oh, fuck. Let's get into these fucking movies.
To the movies. Let's go. All right. On Monday, we watched Tao. On Tuesday, we watched Dark Water. Wednesday, Let's Be Evil. Thursday, The Protégé. Friday, Geostorm. Saturday, Sayonara. And Sunday, The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension.
Buckle up, Buckaroo.
How long have you been waiting for that one?
Since I watched it last night.
All right.
Oh, man. Yeah, interesting lineup of movies. I just say interesting when I don't know what else to say because...
Yeah, it was definitely an odd mixture. There was like two
solid movies.
Yeah. I wonder which two you thought and wonder which two I thought.
You were at two also? All right, cool.
Maybe three. I don't know.
Maybe three?
Yeah, four.
Oof.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know, man.
I don't know. So, Tao on Monday. Once a street smart drifter, Julia is the latest person held captive, a body and a mind to be exploited in a fatal experiment. The only thing standing in the way of her freedom is Tao, the advanced artificial intelligence developed in secret by Alex, her sociopathic and enigmatic captor. Tao is armed with a battalion of drones and robots that automate Alex's futuristic smart house and laboratory, the walls lined with screens that visually transport it from grassy plains to the depths of space. Tao's potential is only limited by his understanding of the world he exists in, but Tao is ready for more. Julia, showing resourcefulness and courage, must race against time to bridge the boundaries between man and machine, connect to Tao, and win her freedom before she suffers the same fate as the six other subjects who came before her.
This week's going to have, I think, five of the seven movies have way too long synopses.
That was a long one. Do you want me to read the short one?
No, that's good. Because I don't know if I could really talk about this movie because I don't remember it happening.
I will start by saying this. I am against the masses on this.
What do the masses say about this movie?
They did not like this movie. I liked this movie.
Really?
I did.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, it wasn't great, but no. it was decent.
No. It wasn't bad.
And I don't think it was like... as bad as people were saying it was.
How bad were they saying it was?
I don't know. It's just, it wasn't something like a lot of people... And, it's weird because I think if you get too far down on some of the reviews, like that's where, you know, a lot of people are kind of shitting on the movie. And then the more recent reviews are like, I don't understand the hate. I think what really kind of made this stand out to me was that Gary Oldman was in it. He's the voice of Tao.
Yes.
Which I did not know, I think, going into it. I just said he's credited as Tao voice. So maybe I should have known. Either way, I don't know. I like the concept of this. I think AI movies are, that's a tough one, I think, to approach and maybe get it right.
Yeah. It's hard now. I feel like they used to have it a lot easier because we don't have things.
Yeah, technology wasn't as advanced. Yeah. That,
you know, so they can't get as outlandish and they, you know, I think there's a fine line walking between insane future, just believe it because it's a fictional movie, and keeping it grounded enough to make it believable.
Well, I mean, so like we have AI, artificial intelligence, right? That came out in 2001, kind of on.
Are you just looking up AI movies?
A little bit, just kind of like show the progression of things, right?
Yeah.
iRobot, 2004. I mean, there's plenty of movies out there. 2001, A Space Odyssey. In the 60s, I think, is when that movie came out.
I think so.
1968, look at me. Ooh, been doing that trivia. But like you said, yeah, with the advancement of technology, I think it's, I think we have a better understanding of maybe what's plausible and what's not plausible, or even, I think some movies don't even know where we could be at this point, which is interesting. I think we saw that with... what was the Keanu Reeves movie we watched a couple weeks ago?
The old one?
Yeah.
Johnny Mnemonic?
Yeah. So even there, right, they were kind of speculating that 320 gigabytes would be a lot of, you know, space and storage.
Well, I mean, that was early 90s.
That's what I'm saying. So it was, like, you know, you either over-exaggerate or under-exaggerate exactly because you don't really know what the future is going to hold. And that one, I think, was definitely on the under side of things because, you know, I have... flash drives that are half of that amount in my bag right now, and they're, you know, making massive storage devices. So that's just an interesting thing. But I don't know. I liked this movie in the sense of, I don't know, just like how Tao and its understanding of the world was set to be in the house itself, right? It only knew what it could learn from other people. It was kind of a weird relationship between him and Alex. And I think towards the end of the film, I started to feel bad for Tao. Like, it almost seemed like he was in pain when his memories was being erased, which is a weird thing to think about because I will, you know, empty a trash bin on my computer without even hesitation, you know? So it's kind of like,
you're deleting its memories. Stop.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, it's weird how you make that connection with the computer in this versus like, we use technology every day and it's not something that ever crosses our mind. But also, you know, there's not artificial intelligence really where it can learn and grow and almost be what this movie, you know, really had a good topic of, was what it means to be human essentially, right?
Sure. Yeah.
I can tell by your face, you don't really remember this movie at all.
I remember her driving a metal bar into solid concrete at some point. It made no sense. But other than that, yeah.
I don't know. I was kind of bought in on this movie, though, up until the end, I think. I mean, it was kind of, I get why she had to be kidnapped in the beginning. There was an exposition with her just to, I guess, kind of show her life before she got kidnapped. But it didn't really do anything to her character, right? She could have just woken up, I think, and been kidnapped and still had the same sort of, you know, premise around the story without even having to, you know, say that she had a life outside of that area, which is fine. I just, sure. It never played into anything.
I don't know. I just, it's hard for me to, I have a hard time with like sentient electronics.
Yeah.
And so there, like, if you just shut your brain off and watch it, it makes enough sense, but I can't do that for sentient electronics, for like, you know, Tao was erased after the whole thing, but then in his little floaty,
his little drone, his little, well, that's what I was trying Flubber, to get at for the
what's her name in Flubber, the little floaty, his little friend Meebo or something.
Shit, I haven't seen that movie in
years. I know,
years,
it's been a long
dude.
Time, right?
Holy
but that's,
cow.
That's what I thought of, that little drone flying around talking.
I could search.
And
I
like,
don't know if
after
I'll find
that,
it.
He just learns, but he's just a little thing and like...
Yeah, I get that. Like, what, I said...
It's not a baby, right? It's not going to grow. It's not... You need to program it. And so... And I think the disconnect for me too was it's this AI... And yeah, it's developing and has feelings and stuff, like what it thinks.
It,
but that's where the disconnect
feelings,
is the feelings.
Right? Yeah.
Like the feelings part just doesn't. And then the whole like erasing his memories hurts him and is like painful. Like that shit doesn't make sense. I don't know.
Yeah, like I said,
there was just so many things that I couldn't be like, yeah, cool.
I think whatever. The argument, right, was again going to that, you know, what necessarily makes you human, and I think it was trying to show that like Tao was more human than Alex, right?
Yeah.
Alex was,
but I mean, we have movies like Ex Machina, and you know what I mean. Like,
no, I know.
There's so many better AI movies that portray it in a
different light,
and that's what I feel like. This one almost didn't go far enough into the absurd for it to be a believable future of this, you know, AI being that could exist, kind of thing.
No, and I get that.
And then they're just like in a house in the middle of fucking nowhere too by the end. And it seems like they're in an apartment.
Yeah, like I
know.
Said, the this end kind of took me out of it, right? The story leading up till pretty much the third act I felt was really grounded. I just thought it was kind of cool to see two characters interact with each other in a space, one being AI, the other being human, and how, you know, they can use each other resourcefully for different things. And then, like I said, the third act was just a shit show that didn't make the movie great. I mean, they mentioned the self-destruct house, or the self-destruction house, and you knew that's what was going to kind of everything was leading to that. They had the drone flying, and he, like, threw it at the wall and broke it, so you knew that
was... They zoom in on it, too. They're like, look at this broken piece of technology that's going to come back later.
Yeah.
And then the second, you're like, oh, she's looking for Tao, but... But, like, also, what is this little drone has the entire Tao, old Tao program stored locally on it?
That's what I'm saying. Like, it definitely, what, if you think like, too far into it, you're definitely going
to
be.
It's hard for me not to, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you are a computer programmer. Right. Yeah, it's, so I could see that,
it was
like,
fine.
I just was saying, I liked it more than I thought I would. And I also liked it more than a majority of people did.
It's not the worst movie we watched this week by far.
I agree.
And
I think we both know what movie we hated the most this week.
Yeah.
And it was Geostorm.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Geostorm might be a close second, to be honest.
Oh, shit.
But anyway, moving into Tuesday, so we can get to these fun ones that we want to talk about.
Yeah.
Tuesday, we watched Dark Water. Dahlia Williams and her daughter Cecilia move into a rundown apartment in New York's Roosevelt Island. She's currently in the midst of divorce proceedings, and the apartment, though near an excellent school for her daughter, is all she can afford. From the time she arrives, there are mysterious occurrences, and there's a constant drip from the ceiling in the only bedroom. There are also noises coming from the apartment directly above hers, though it would appear to be vacant. Is the apartment haunted, or is there a simpler explanation?
So this is a remake of the 2002 Dark Water film, directed by Hideo Nakata. Sorry. Mm-hmm. So essentially, most Americans know him for his Japanese horror films, like The Ring, not the American remake. The Ring 2 and Ring 2, American. Which are Japanese and American versions of that. So that's kind of his iconic status for horror films.
And I see that in this. The water thing is really a...
Yes, symbolic, but also eerie, creepy. Yeah, like he uses it to invoke fear.
I want
to
watch the original, to be honest.
That was my first comment, was I really want to watch the original because I wasn't too satisfied with this remake.
Okay.
I mean, I thought it was okay. It's pretty predictable.
Yeah.
I mean, there were some moments that felt a little creepy, but... A lot of people, again, and I hate to do other review stuff, but, you know, people had similar thoughts to that who had seen both. And I think it was just executed better in the other version of it or the original version of it.
Sure.
So I was super intrigued to be like, yeah, I would like to watch that. Because I think this movie forced a lot of things, and maybe the other one does too. But I felt this one, it didn't really flesh out its characters very well. Like, the entire divorce plot line just seemed unnecessary. Like, there wasn't really anything minus, like, driving her to be in that apartment.
Yeah, they didn't show enough to warrant some of the... you were just kind of expected to...
Buy in.
Yeah. And I didn't hate it. I thought it was entertaining enough. But I saw that the Japanese version got pretty high praise.
Yeah.
So I would be interested in watching that at some point. I think my biggest thing for this, though... is I just think it could have ended so much sooner.
Yeah, the ending did drag on quite a bit. And
it felt like the Return of the King.
I was going to say, there was like four or five endings where it could have stopped, and then it started up again. And then it started, yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
So this one stars Jennifer Connelly, who plays Dahlia. And like we said, she's currently going through a divorce. She has limited funds to be able to find a suitable living situation, but this is kind of the best bang for her buck. And it's right down the street from an excellent school for her daughter, Cece, who, by the way, is super adorable. Like,
the most adorable child actress
I've ever seen. Like, yeah. Holy she cow, my heart melted.
She made me not want a daughter because I wouldn't be able to say no.
Nothing can happen to her.
Like, oh my goodness.
Ever, you know? But the story kind of revolves around like hallucinations, murder, mystery, kind of like this supernatural element. Which I was all fine with, but my problem, like I said, was the divorce storyline, but also how all of the characters in this movie treated Cece. Like, fuck the school, fuck the education system in this movie. Because she's like, she gets put in time out because she wants her imaginary friend to sing along, and the teacher's like, no, you can't do that. You need to go sit in time out now. Fuck that bitch. Like, let these kids have an imagination. I don't care if it's an imaginary friend, like... Sorry, as a teacher, like, you need to like support children and encourage them, but not happened to her.
What year was this? 2006?
2005.
Son of a bitch. So, I mean, who knows if that's even...
For the time period, maybe it was more accurate.
Maybe that's how they thought to deal with that. It was just kind of punish them out of it, right?
Negative reinforcement. Negative
reinforcement, exactly.
Could you imagine living in this situation, though? And you like call your landlord and you're like, yeah, my roof is leaking.
John C. Reilly. Yeah, he was great in this.
And he's like, oh, yeah, we'll take care of it. And then just doesn't get back to him, doesn't do anything. Until, like I said, forced points. It was almost like the divorce also had to be there so that the lawyer would be introduced, so that the lawyer could talk to the landlord to get the situation figured out. Like, it just seemed like everything was just a plot device to move everything forward. And I didn't think everything was as fleshed out. I'm not saying this was a bad movie. I just think it could have been a lot better, and maybe it was in the original.
Sure. I enjoyed it for the most part, though, just sitting and watching it. I don't think I've seen a mid-2000s horror movie in a long time, and they just feel different.
Well, also, did you get that
kind of vibe?
I mean, I just, if you're looking at movies around that time frame,
they're just shot more like thrillers than they are horror movies now, what we would consider them now. And it's just like a different flavor. I don't know, which I think was a little refreshing to me. I kind of enjoyed that.
And we've talked about it a little bit, right? But more current horror seems to be the loud, in-your-face noises and jump scares. And this, you know, leaves more up to the imagination. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't really even show the girl that drowned until way later in the film. So you're even trying to process, you know, is Cece's imaginary friend real? Is she not? Like, why is the ceiling leaking? And for me, like, seems pretty predictable as to what happened.
Oh, it absolutely was. I'm not saying that it...
But also, I've seen enough movies that I think, like, I, you know...
I'm just saying, as many movies as we've watched so far in this...
Current.
Experience, current horror movies, this kind of felt like a fresh breath air.
Yes, fresh of breath air.
A breath of fresh air.
No, it was a nice change, and I think it helps that it had, you know, the guidance of Hideo Nakata, who wrote the original in 2002. I think he's just a really great director for horror and kind of creepy water shit, you know?
Yeah, he's got creepy water shit down.
That is his forte.
Which, so last thing on this one. So I don't know if you know the story, but it blew up either last year or 2020. The Cecil Hotel documentary on Netflix.
I'm very familiar with it. I have not watched the documentary.
Okay, well, you don't have to because that's a whole other discussion for another time on whether or not the documentary was effective and whatnot. But the story, you know, to hear about the story, I'd never heard of that. And that's what that mirrored. This story, the story of what's her, I think Lisa Lam.
Oh, okay.
Do you know what happened at the Cecil Hotel like that?
Again, I think as soon as you mention it, I'll be familiar with it.
Well, it's the same story as this, but she was a teenager or young adult, maybe early 20s, I think, or something. And she was from Canada, I believe, came to California.
Yeah.
And she ended up staying at the Cecil Hotel, and they have footage of her talking to people in the elevator and no one's there kind of thing. And
interesting.
And long story short, what happened is she ended up falling into the water tank up on the roof and died
essentially.
And they couldn't find her for a long time. And then they found her, and then it sparked this whole, so it goes into much more in the, you know, what actually
very
happened
similar to this.
I remember them talking about this movie, like saying, oh, this is like the events of Dark Water or whatever. I don't remember what happened, what the outcome of all that was, if this actually did inspire that somehow. Or
yeah, that's kind of interesting. Crazy. Yeah.
But anyway, Cecil Hotel. Want a rabbit hole, go down that one. That's a weird one.
So on Wednesday, we watched Let's Be Evil.
Yeah.
Three chaperones are hired to supervise an advanced learning program for gifted children who wear augmented reality glasses to assist in their education. Contained with a secure underground facility, events quickly spiral out of control. So really quick, this goes to show you how important marketing is to a movie. Because I based this pick off of the poster, and Scott agreed based off of the music in the trailer.
Oh, yes. Oh, that's what this movie was. Yes. Yeah. I'm going to be honest. When I went through the list this week, I genuinely could not remember what the fuck this movie was. I had to, like, I asked Jess, I was like, what the fuck is Let's Be Evil? She's like, oh, it's the one where they were, like, babysitting the kids. I was like, the fuck are you talking about?
This movie sucked. So bad. This movie was in the realm of, like, Driver for me.
Yes.
Like, it was a bad story, terrible writing, not great acting.
I don't know how we stumbled on this, and I wish we hadn't.
Okay, but however, like, I understand the budget was pretty small for this film. And if you take IMDb for what it's worth, it said it was like a $10,000 budget.
That's impressive.
Okay, so they did a lot with, you know, little.
Yeah.
Because even in film, $10,000 does not get you very far. I mean, with camera rentals, I'd say the majority of this fucking budget went to the lights that they had to rent for their tunnel scenes and shit. And they just had to place those in every room that they did. I don't know. This, again, it felt... like college level, not professional level videography. And there's nothing wrong with that, okay? And I shit on Driver, and I'm going to take a step back and be like, you know what? There's still a need for this because this is how we grow as filmmakers, and this is how we get better as we kind of push into the industry.
Sure, but we know with Driver that that wasn't the guy's first movie. Like, that wasn't, you know what I mean? I don't know with this one. Do you know anything about the director?
I don't know anything about the director.
The crew?
Again, like I said, the marketing for this film seems so much better, which is why.
That's weird.
And it's on Hulu, right? So, but like the poster looked decent enough. And then as soon as I started playing the trailer, like just the music, Scott's like, I'm sold.
Music got me. But this was the longest 80-minute movie I've ever seen. And I think the last time I said that was Driver. So I'm glad you brought Driver up. Just a lot of like jarring, disorienting cuts and perspective changes, because it's all like the whole movie's fucking first person pretty much once she puts the glasses on.
Yeah, and it switches between the different point of views. Yeah,
yeah, and that could be interesting.
I think the reason for it, right, is because when they take off the glasses in the setting, right, everything's pitch black. There's no lighting in the environment that they are. So the only light source that they're getting is through their augmented reality glasses.
Right.
So if you were to have any shots of the surrounding area, you wouldn't see light because there is no light.
Right.
So the premise behind that, I get.
Yes, it makes sense in the context of the movie.
Of the film.
I'm saying the way that they went about doing it was just kind of the changing of perspectives was just, especially towards the end when things started snowballing a little, like how they jump from person to person kind of thing.
Yeah.
It was just,
it felt like a bad video game cutscene.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I would say since the entire movie was that, it wasn't as bad as like the Doom movie with The Rock. Like, it wasn't that bad. But I don't know. But the acting wasn't great either, but it's hard to tell how much of that was the actor's fault.
Or the writing. Just the
fucking dialogue was so bad.
Yeah.
So bad.
It was not great. A lot of stuff felt maybe phoned in, but at the same time, like, if this was a passion project, like, maybe people were invested in it.
And I think...
I
think they were. I think they just aren't... They were. I mean, they're obviously inexperienced actors.
And to be fair, right? This movie is on Hulu. Like, it made the big leagues.
Hulu doesn't have a bar.
Okay. So, really quick, I'm on the IMDb page.
Yeah.
And I just now noticed this. It's kind of funny. But if you scroll down far enough, there's more like this.
Oh, no. Is Driver on there?
The first movie is Super Fast. The Fast and the Furious. Yes. Like,
I know what you're talking about.
So... That was just kind of funny to me.
That is, this was better than that.
I haven't seen
I
that.
I think you and I
have, or maybe I the repressed first 10 the minutes memory
of that or something one night a long time ago, and we're like, yeah, fuck that.
But I'll say this. I want to give credit where credit is due. I think it's kind of a cop out, right, for neon lights as we get further into things. Like, there are some times that it's beautiful. This was just like, this was the lighting that we could afford in our budget, yeah. So we're going to use it. But what I'm trying to get at was, I think for what it was and the budget, the special effects weren't bad. I think they did a pretty decent job of showing you the augmented reality with That's the little fair. Profiles kind budget, of coming up. And
I'll give you
that. It was good enough, right?
I'll give you that.
And I'm not trying to, like I said, I want to find one
movie around it.
The movie wasn't good.
I mean, like, it's nothing supposed to really be a happened. Suspense. Yeah. Well, any of the suspense didn't land and seemed comical half the time, especially when it was specifically something happening in their quote-unquote augmented reality, but wasn't from the perspective of the person who was seeing it. So, like, Darby doing the puzzle when they get to that, like, the exit door or whatever, and he's in the fire chamber incinerator room or whatever. They showed the puzzle that he was doing once, but then they just showed it from the other girl's perspective, and he's just moving his hands. And then the music fucking kicks in, and it's like this loud, intense music, but you're just looking at somebody moving their hands in air. And I don't know. It was just so...
I think the problem I had was... So the kids that they're working with are geniuses. They are highly intelligent students who are able to essentially hack this AI system and be able to control it and modify things. But that doesn't give them super strength. Like, you have three grown-ass adults. Like, go get a flashlight, track these kids down, punch them in the fucking face, and be done with it, you know? Like, you're not, like, take the fucking glasses off.
They're all, like,
fucking and then find 10, a flashlight, and maybe. You're fine. There's only, like, what, 12 of them, and there's three of you. I think each one could take four kids.
Yeah.
I'm a good teacher, I promise, okay? But I'm just speaking in terms of this movie.
I'm gonna be honest. I think what made this suck so much worse for me is I held out hope almost the entire movie.
For a payoff? For a satisfied ending?
I had a Christmas horror story in my head.
Oh.
For some reason, I chose to, at this moment watching this movie, to remember that. And I just was hoping for some miracle twist ending that could make me write the rest off as lack of budget and, you know, whatever. But I was met with this steamy turd of an ending that really just made me more mad that I put so much faith in this fucking movie. Like, there's some really interesting ideas in there.
Yeah.
That could have been an interesting story, but this movie ain't it.
So this movie kind of reminds me of, like, when I was in architecture for my freshman year of college. And we had to go out to a site, analyze it, and do a bunch of things. And one of the things that I had noticed from the site was wind played a huge factor into it. So I talked to, like, my TAs about things, and they pointed me in a different direction. So I went a whole different direction with, like, the building that I had planned for the site. Come time for the very end when we're doing our presentations, the TAs are there, some of the professors are there. And I talked about my initial theory and then, you know, the direction I got and the direction I took the building. And most of my comments were after, well, I think it's really interesting of the concept of wind at the site. And I really wish you would have played off of that more. And I really wish, you know, like, you maybe would have had multiple levels to your building to show the different, you know, how wind impacts at different levels of, you know, of the site.
Are you fucking kidding me?
What I'm trying to get at, though, is I feel like this movie is kind of that, is that they had a direction for their film. They got some notes. They did the entire film. They bring it to get critiqued, and then the professors essentially are just like, yeah, you know,
everything
you have a,
we told
you,
you
have
was
a good
wrong.
Concept. However, you know, I really wish you would have played off of this more, or off like all of the notes they should have been giving you in, you know, kind of the stage leading up to this.
Yeah.
They didn't get that feedback. So that's just, I don't know. It might be a weird little analogy, but that's kind of what this movie made me feel like, was like the concept was there. There was just not enough feedback in the early stages of the film to make it a great film, or even a good film, decent
or
film,
or even a watchable
film. I don't know.
You really gave it to him there. Anyway,
Thursday,
moving on to something with a lot more budget, the protege
worldwide,
the prodigy
wide.
Is this me? Do I have to read this one?
Yeah.
Fuck. Rescued as a child by the legendary assassin Moody and trained in the family business.
I wish you could see my face right now.
I can.
I meant everyone listening.
Oh, others. Rescued as a child by legendary assassin Moody, who's played by Samuel L. Jackson, and trained in the family business, Anna is the world's most skilled contract killer. But when Moody, the man who was like a father to her and taught her everything she needs to know about trust and survival, turned on her, just kidding, is brutally killed. That seems like the generic way that they would have gone. Anna vows revenge as she becomes entangled with an enigmatic killer whose attraction to her goes way beyond cat and mouse. Their confrontation turns deadly, and the loose ends of a life spent killing will weave themselves even tighter. I don't really want to talk about this movie.
This was one of my surprises.
You like this?
I really enjoyed this
really?
Movie. Yeah.
Good for you.
I appreciate that. I like the support. I thank you.
I'm happy for you.
I honestly thought like we might have another Kate, Ava, Gunpowder Milkshake movie, but I don't know. I was pleasantly surprised by this movie.
Is it just because Samuel L. Jackson didn't turn on her?
No, because even in Ava, what's-his-face didn't turn on her. Like, it wasn't that twist.
But I feel like you liked that about Ava.
I did. I'm just saying, I thought this was better than all of those films. And why shouldn't I be, right? If I'm investing 187 hours of my life in just 15 weeks of doing this, I should try to find satisfaction in these movies.
That's how I felt about last week. I'm not there anymore. I'm off of that.
I was gonna say, you were defending a bunch of shit, and now it's my turn to defend.
It's your turn this week. Dude, this movie is fucking just typical, predictable action movie. It wasn't the worst thing. It didn't suck.
I was gonna say, the plot for sure definitely seemed very predictable. Like, you knew Samuel L. Jackson wasn't dead.
Of course not.
You knew Michael Keaton was the bad guy from the time he walked into the bookstore. Exactly. I didn't think they were gonna fuck. Okay,
they were gonna fuck. We put money on that.
You put money on it with who?
Yeah. My dad and Jess. And
did you win money?
Yeah. Well, we all bet that they were
gonna fuck. Oh, okay. So you all won money. Yeah.
Oh, no, I think Chloe watches with us. And I also put a bet on that he was going to turn and end up helping her in the end. And to be fair, I was wrong. But Chloe didn't take that bet. She thought that he was going to try and kill her and he was going to end up dead.
And he did.
So she won that one. So good job, Chloe.
Good job, Chloe. I don't know. I just thought it was fun. And maybe this is my triple X, you know?
Well, listen, so it's funny that this is where the position we're in, because I had plenty to say during this movie. I think I talked the entire
90% of
this fucking movie. And there's only one other movie that I felt that way about and that I was that vocal and active during the movie. And that was Infinite.
another movie I liked and you enjoyed.
That I thought fucking sucked. So, you know, and that's I didn't think it was as bad as Infinite, but I was just kind of annoyed while watching it. Maggie Q was fine. Michael Keaton was fine. I barely remember what happened, to be honest, like in the middle part of the movie. So I don't have much to say about it either, because
there's a lot of double crosses.
It was just insignificant, right, to me. It just wasn't enough to earn a place in my mind. And that's... So
that's
there
fine,
is to it.
You know. I don't know. I think part of where I was finding some amusement, and it's not just this movie; it's a lot of movies. And I just as I start to appreciate some of these stupid things, you know, that I haven't in the past. But I think it's really funny that in almost every scene or movie that we watch that involve guns, everyone seems to think that they're a close-up weapon. Like, no one ever uses them as a long-range weapon, but maybe it's because everybody has a terrible shot in these movies that they have to use them up close. That's
Everyone's
the only
a stormtrooper.
Way. So it just made me laugh because every single time she's in a position that most likely she's probably going to get shot.
You just brought a gun to a knife fight.
Exactly, right? Like, they walk up, like, right next to her, and then she gives, you know, now you've lost your advantage of having that weapon, and she's going to kick your ass and shoot you and...
I think I just don't fucking like action movies like this. I don't know. They're just all the same shit. They're just...
Yeah, I know.
Dumb.
And I thought this was a little bit different, and maybe that's why I liked it more than some of the others. I felt the other ones followed the same guideline, and this one tried to have some of those different twists, even though they were super predictable, and no one's ever really dead, you know?
Yeah. No one's ever really gone.
That's okay. No one's ever really gone.
That's what I'm saying, though, is like, you know, Samuel Jackson didn't die. The guy at the very end of the film who had a hit put on him previously, he didn't actually die. Like, no one ever actually really died in this film.
We don't even know if Michael Keaton's dead at the end.
Yeah, it's just you heard two gunshots and she walks out.
Walking out.
He might be right behind her, you know, and they just... They were too far away from each other, and they missed the shot.
That's open-ended.
Right? Because they're about 10 feet away.
I choose to believe it was a love story.
They were about 10 feet away, so they don't have that accuracy. Yeah. They need to be 6 feet closer, you know? I don't know. I'm not saying it was the greatest movie. I enjoyed it. And I think I'm trying to enjoy movies more since I'm spending so much time watching them.
Yeah. I don't know how you can do that with our Friday movie, though.
No, I hate this fucking movie. This is garbage. And you know what? We brought it upon ourselves. And you know
we did. We needed a Gerard Butler movie.
Yes. At the beginning of the week, Scott and I were like, we haven't had a bad Gerard Butler film Let's watch one of those. And man, do I wish I could go back in time and kick both of our asses. Just fuck this movie. It was bad. I didn't even try.
No, you didn't try. Neither of us tried. We actually watched this one together, which may have made it even worse.
It probably did.
But
so, Geostorm. When catastrophic climate change endangers Earth's very survival, world governments unite and create the Dutch Boy Program, also known as Dutch Bros Coffee, a worldwide net of satellites surrounding the planet that are armed with geoengineering technologies designed to stave off the natural disasters. After successfully protecting the planet for 3 years, something is starting to go wrong. Two brothers are tasked with solving the program's malfunction before a worldwide geostorm can engulf the planet. Man, fuck this movie. And here's the thing. This was so forgettable for me.
That's literally my notes.
I can't even remember what I was mad about. I don't remember what was so bad about it.
I can just picture Gerard Butler standing in front of a giant screen talking to his brother, who was the kid from 21.
21.
and the president.
And they're both.
And they're giant because he's standing there and it's a giant screen that he's talking to. That's all I fucking remember.
So, yeah, and they're not even looking at him.
No, yeah.
They're looking like off camera. My face is over here. I remember at the very beginning of this film, we had a theory, and maybe it holds true. I don't remember a lot of Gerard Butler movies, but I think anytime he has to do any movement, he's just super winded. Just every scene he ever has to talk, where he just traveled from another area, he's super deep breaths, and maybe that's just his character. I don't know. So I told Tristan we were watching this, and she had tried to watch this movie a long time ago. She made it about 20 minutes in. And she usually is very good about at least finishing something out. She couldn't make it through this movie. And this would definitely qualify as one of those, I would hit start and about 5 minutes would go by and I'd say, nope, and turn it off. This would not deserve the rest of my attention.
No, this one was so much worse than, what's the fucking one we watched earlier last year?
Oh, the other Gerard Butler film.
The other recent disaster Gerard Butler movie, yeah.
Yeah, that one seems pretty good compared to this film.
A little bit.
That one was called Greenland. I don't know. I think, again, it's so hard for me to want to even remember this movie.
I remember Greenland more than I remember Geostorm.
And we watched that like months ago. That was ago.
Like 8 months ago, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I think writing had a big... you have a pretty solid cast here, and I feel like I've mentioned this before, but when your cast doesn't buy into the movie, I'm not bought in, and everyone didn't seem like they were enjoying being even on set, and maybe that's tough for me to say.
I don't know. This also had that Michael Bay sheen on it. Like super saturated shots with the sunlight off of people's faces while they're talking to each other
about something
that isn't very deep, but it's got the music to make it deep.
Yeah, you mentioned it. Michael Bay.
Yeah.
Big explosions over the top.
Yeah.
The fucking spacesuits that these motherfuckers wear are like straight up vibranium.
Yeah, they got a whole fucking...
whole space shuttle. It just ripped to shreds every piece of equipment that it touched in space.
But they're fine.
All propelled by the power of air.
What the fuck was this movie? I just tried to look up, but I typed in Greenland. I don't even know what the fuck this movie's called. what is this movie?
What rabbit hole are you on right now?
Geostorm. Gosh.
Oh, you're trying to get to this
movie. I was trying to get to the IMDb page so I could look up the guy's name because... The guy from 21, Jim Sturgis. Yeah. His hair in this movie, man. He looked like a Lego. He looked like a Lego guy. Like it was just a piece that just
removable,
clipped onto his head.
Yeah, a removable wig. You can just...
What the fuck was up with that?
Oh, that was another issue. Was at the very beginning of this film, the exposition is essentially Gerard Butler's kicked off of this program that he essentially built himself. It was his baby, you know? My baby.
His baby.
His baby.
Get in my belly.
Gotta protect my baby. Anyways, like 5 years or something go by, or 2 years, whatever it said, but nobody even has a resemblance of change. Like, everyone just looks the same. Like, they, at least with, like, Jim Sturgis, they maybe could have cut his hair, you know, and made him look, like, a little older and wiser in his position after, you know, running things, maybe throw some gray in there.
You're really overestimating how people change over 3 years, man.
Dude, I've changed quite a bit over 3 years. Fuck.
Yeah, me too. I'm much fatter than I was then. Nobody gained any weight or anything. Bullshit.
I don't know. This movie does not deserve a 5.3 out of 10 on IMDb. Is that what it has?
Yep. Wow.
Either way, I don't know. I wish I could say more as to why it was bad, but I think just do yourself a favor and don't watch it. But if you're interested enough to see if we are really accurate with our analysis, then watch the first 10 minutes and then make the argument for yourself that, yeah, I should probably turn this movie off.
If you haven't figured out if your tastes align with ours and how to best use what we try not to recommend, but how best to use our recommendations for yourself, this would be the judge. If you enjoy this movie, then take the opposite of anything we ever say.
Yeah, that's pretty fair. If we say that we don't like a movie, you probably will.
If you think this movie's a pile of shit, then
you might not agree with the rest of us.
We might find you some good stuff, but
we don't learn you today.
I feel like we've been trying to be pretty good about if we're like, man, this is just a great movie and we recommend it. It's not like we're not going around telling everybody to watch Titane.
No, that's like we prefaced that. It was like you gotta have the right stomach for that. However, we definitely turned the page quite a bit. Moving into Saturday,
we seem to do that. Sayonara.
Goodbye.
Major Lloyd Groover, a Korean War flying ace reassigned to Japan, staunchly supports the military's opposition to marriages between American troops and Japanese women. But that's before Groover experiences the love that challenges his own deeply set prejudices and plunges him into conflict with the U.S. Air Force and Japan's own cultural taboos.
So, a little preface on this. This was a movie that was recommended to Scott and myself by my grandma. She gave us a few movies to watch that I hadn't seen before, so I reached out to Scott to see if he had seen them. This was on the list. This was a good movie.
Yeah.
I really liked this movie, and I think it, at least for the time period, because this came out in 1957, I'm sure this was definitely the controversial movie.
Yeah.
Around the time, because these were like real events that people were kind of having to struggle with or deal with in their own lives, of kind of marriages between Americans and other countries that they were visiting while, you know, serving for the military. And a lot of the issues that kind of resolved around that of the military of essentially, you know, really going through every process that they could to prevent these marriages from ever even happening, to them finding ways to separate the two after they had been married. These were all like real events that, you know, my grandma was kind of filling me in as we watched it. I watched it with her. I made sure to do that because it was recommended. And
yeah,
she's giving me some little, you know, tidbits and trivia along the way, which was which was cool. However, afterwards we were chatting about it and she said, Mitch, I'd be really interested to know what Scott has to think about this. So Scott, what do you think about Sayonara?
I thoroughly enjoyed this movie. I don't know that I have a whole lot to say, to be honest, because I think I was preoccupied with trying to watch Marlon Brando and see if I could pick out like how he mumbles since I found out about that whole thing.
Okay, this movie definitely did that, and I don't know if they ever went back and did the voiceovers, because half of the shit he said I didn't understand. And my mom kept calling him the water ADR. Boy during this movie. What?
No, I really enjoyed him in this, though. I loved the, I don't remember his name, but the other guy who shows him to the Kobayashi.
Joe Kelly?
No, not his friend Kelly. The other guy,
Bailey?
Maybe Bailey, yeah. And just the, like, the banter they have.
Yeah.
Just fucking cracked me up. Like, yeah, it was just great. Just the competition between
them. Between different...
he was Army, he was, yeah.
Yeah.
And Groover.
Was
with Air Force.
Yeah, just the shit talking between the different branches of military was fun.
Just relationships that people had in this were enjoyable to watch. But also, like, some of the stuff they touched on, I thought was, you know, him living up to his dad and him just going along with the, you know, everything for show with his
like the nuclear family and the
but like everything he does reflects on them. So yeah. It's like, you know,
there's definitely high expectations. A level
of losing yourself because of just what's expected of you versus yeah. And I thought they, you know, they handled that. You know, well, they handled that well. Yeah.
My grandma was telling me about Red Buttons, who plays Joe Kelly, and she was when they did the Oscars for this. He won for best supporting actor in a best actor in supporting role. Sorry, but she was surprised because he's known for his comedy, and this was more of a serious dramatic role for him. He was kind of the one to lead the pack, right, and say like he's gonna follow his heart, and he's, you know, he doesn't care what other people think.
Yeah, and his interest and actual. Like the way they developed their relationship, him and Katsumi, I thought was, you know, they genuinely had interest in each other and the cultures, and that's what kind of opened Lloyd's eyes to.
Yeah, they had this idea of just the culture, and you know, it was again, I think it was expected that Americans continue to marry other Americans, and. You could tell that they both cared for each other, loved each other, because they were willing to learn the language for one another. It even got to a point to where she was willing to have some like black market surgery to change her eyes, which he flipped out on. Was like, can you just tell her that like I love her for who she is? She doesn't need to change for me. And I don't know, like you said, the characters were really developed in this movie, and you saw the motivations behind things, and it made for a more interesting story. And it's a longer film for sure. And I think if you're not a story driven type of person, this might not, you know, necessarily be the easiest to get through, because sometimes it might feel like it drags. But I don't know. I enjoyed seeing, because this was all shot in Japan, which I thought was super cool. It looks beautiful there. I'd love to visit myself.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, Japan's on my list for sure.
I think I'm trying to avoid talking about some of the stuff, because I think the ending, for sure, it was beautiful and super sad. And I mean, it's a heavy scene.
Yeah.
And I'm not necessarily trying to, you know, give anything away as to what happens with the movie, but I really enjoyed this. And I think my grandma was a little unsure as to how I felt, because she kept kind of making comments of like, well, I know it's not Spider-Man, No Way Home. And I was like, just because it's not that doesn't mean it's not a great film, you know? Like some of the best movies we've talked about on this podcast have been from, you know, earlier decades.
Yeah, I still think from this whole experience, my favorite movie that we've watched so far is Dial M for Murder.
Yep. 100%. Which she was also recommending Hitchcock movies to us.
Oh yeah, we got to have maybe we do a Hitchcock week.
That'd be sweet.
That might be a little much, because then we will never.
We would exhaust all of our great options, because almost every one of his movies makes the IMDb top 250 list.
Yeah, then we won't have something to sprinkle in later and look forward to.
But no, this was a super powerful movie. I think it was definitely, like I said, a controversial piece at the time, and probably a testament to just how people view the world.
Yeah, well, it's a look at, I mean, it's two cultures that hated each other.
Yeah.
You know? And so I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what else to say. I take me home, Johnny. Play me off.
John.
There's no mustache like my father's mustache. That's the only mustache in town. I just don't want to talk about this next one, I think, because Sunday was a movie.
Yeah, Sunday, so many Johns. Is it my turn to read?
Yeah, it's you, bitch.
Ah, shit.
I'll read this one, though, I would love to read this one. So
please.
You want me to?
Go for it.
Brain surgeon, rock musician, adventurer Buckaroo Banzai is a modern Renaissance man and has made scientific history. He perfected the oscillation overthruster, which allows him to travel through solid matter by using the eighth dimension. But when his sworn enemy, Dr. Emilio Lizardo, devises a plot to steal a device and bring an evil army back to destroy Earth, Buckaroo goes cranium to cranium with the madman in a
genie in a bottle.
Buckaroo goes cranium to cranium with the madman in a battle that could spell doom for the universe. Along with his crime-fighting team, the Hong Kong Cavaliers, Buckaroo must stop the evil alien invaders from the eighth dimension who are planning to conquer our dimension. He's helped by Penny Pretty, the long-lost twin sister of his late wife, and some good extra-dimensional beings who look and talk like they're from Jamaica.
What the fuck was this? I think you said it. It's a movie. Oh my god.
I don't know. What a loony fucking movie, man.
I had fun watching it, but I still can't even fathom or comprehend what the fuck I did watch.
Yeah. I feel like this is the type of movie that I would normally love.
But
like, it's absurd and super 80s.
Yes.
And just like fun, goofy, ridiculous, whatever. But I was honestly just kind of bored for most of it and kind of preoccupied. And I don't know. I mean, from the week that I had, maybe I just couldn't enjoy this as much as I'd hoped because of other stuff weighing on me. But I just couldn't get into it. I was just ready to go to bed.
It was a weird one for sure. And I felt moments of that.
I mean, there's some funny stuff in it.
I feel like this movie took all of the best parts of a bunch of other movies and threw them into one.
It was like
Flash Gordon met Tron, met Queen, just like it's fucking like
the ultimate mashup of
like you have this fucking god of a human
action
Buckaroo Banzai movies. Who's super intelligent, is in a band, who can drive a car through a mountain, who works with NASA but is also a brain surgeon. I mean, you can't pack more shit into this man.
He was everything. Yeah, no, there was some really funny stuff in it. Like John Lithgow as the eighth dimension Hitler.
Yes.
Version of Hitler. John Worfen, his name in the movie.
Lord John Worfen.
Lord John Worfen. Yeah, that was goofy and hilarious.
Christopher Lloyd is John Big Booty.
John Big Booty. It's Big Booty.
Big Booty.
And Big everybody booty. Called him Big Booty. Yeah, I still don't know why Jeff Goldblum was in a cowboy costume for half the movie.
Yeah, what the fuck?
I don't understand.
Like in one scene, he's like assisting with
surgery.
Yeah, with the surgery. And then like his everyday outfit is wearing this bright red cowboy outfit.
I didn't get the perfect Tommy thing.
Just maybe it was to appeal to perfect. The Western audience. Like I said, this maybe. Had a little bit just of everything. So they just fucking threw.
No, did you get the whole perfect Tommy thing? Like every time you tell him to do something, you'd be like, "Why I gotta do it?" And he'd be like, "Cause you're perfect." And he's like, "Yeah, I can't argue with that." And then he'd go.
I
was like, "What the fuck is happening? What?"
But as this movie kept playing, dude, I kept recognizing so many faces.
Oh, yeah, there's people a ton
that
of people
I had seen in like 90s films, like what I grew up with. This movie was crazy.
Of course, Peter Weller is Buckaroo. All the Johns.
So many Johns.
So
dude.
Many Johns. John.
Dude, you think Big John, this, and Lil John were in this?
Oh, maybe. No, they're dead.
Well, this is before their time.
Oh, you're right.
So maybe Big John and Lil John were there.
Big John and Lil John
before
were.
Before Michael Myers cut them up.
They were friends with John Smallberry. That is somebody's name in the movie. That's one of the aliens' names, John Smallberries.
I wish I could talk even about what this was, but I guess I'm still trying to comprehend just what I like. It was weird because like a lot happened, but it was also not a lot happened.
Well, it was just like,
and it was all
everything
over
was
the place.
So quick.
Yes.
And shit happened that it wasn't even enough to stick in your brain that you're just like, what just happened? Okay, we're moving on now because other things are happening.
I was gonna say there's just so many
and
ideas.
You just ride that wave to the end of the movie and then it's over, and then you get that fucking end credits where that fucking song. What the fuck is that song?
Yeah, it was like a music video. And they're all just like walking
like
down
Brown.
The street.
And they're all just walking, yeah. And like occasionally dancing and then just walking.
And then it just ends with like a tagged wall that says Buckaroo Banzai. And
that was great.
It was like Yeah, it's kind of what you would expect out of an 80s music video, I guess, you know?
It was very 80s.
It was.
It might have been the most 80s thing I've ever seen.
Maybe to ever exist.
It's the 80s equivalent of, or it to the 80s is the equivalent of, what's that music video to the 90s? I can't think of it. It's like a specific music video. Or like a commercial or something. There's a TV commercial. I'm sure there's a TV commercial. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
I'm looking up most 90s most music 90s video ever. Most 90s
music video, yeah.
But no, this movie was pretty crazy. The costumes were super outrageous and ridiculous. Man. I think I've just been spoiled by gore. And maybe that's why I'm still just like not as bought into this movie as I feel like I should be.
Like, this wasn't in the same realm as gore.
I know, I'm just saying.
But it kind of was, I guess. Yeah, I don't know.
Like, that one has like travels between worlds, gore, but this one has aliens
in our world. But gore wasn't trying to be gore. Gore just successfully was gore accidentally.
Accidentally.
Right? Gore became gore by genuinely trying to just be good.
To be fair, though.
This was like trying to be ridiculous.
And it has pretty good reviews or ratings.
I really would like, I feel like this is another one I would rewatch and I probably would like it more. I do think that
if you picked up on maybe the references along the way.
Like, just, I don't know. I just had other shit on my mind and I just couldn't get into it. Like, I wasn't ready for such a ridiculous, mindless, goofy.
Okay.
The whole fucking scene in the bar.
I don't know.
When they're playing and he hears her crying. And
yeah, like, it's like super loud. They're in the middle of a concert and he's like, hold
somebody up. Somebody out there crying.
Ooh, yeah. And then it's like the twin sister of his deceased wife.
Yeah. And she goes to kill herself. She goes to shoot herself just sitting right there. And somebody bumps her elbow. Arm. She shoots in the air. And then
everyone freaks out. That was so funny, though, because everyone on stage like pulls out a fucking gun.
Everybody's got a gun.
Everyone from the Cavaliers is packing. So, question. Answer. As we kind of wrap up this movie. At the very end, there was the announcement of the upcoming sequel, Buckaroo Banzai versus the World Crime League.
Did that happen?
It hasn't happened. With the world of requels that we are currently in, what would this movie look like in that world of coming back and just like Buckaroo Banzai versus the World Crime League?
I don't know, but for some weird reason, I feel like Hollywood would throw Chris Pratt.
Oh, into the mix?
Yeah. I just feel like it would be a movie Chris Pratt would be in.
Yeah, kind of.
Which
that
doesn't necessarily mean it would be good with him lately. If James Gunn directed it, maybe.
Yeah, they have good chemistry.
Guardians, man.
Dude, could you imagine a James Gunn directed Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai across?
I'm saying, like, you have to get someone like that who can do, like, they can throw the humor in with it, tied with the music. You know, ambiance flair, but still have a layer of levity,
and also
to
do
it,
a lot of character building within the world.
Because there's many people, so it's perfect for him. Because Guardians, where you have, you know,
hey James Gunn, if you're out there listening to our podcast, we just gave you your next big hit.
Well, we didn't give him shit. We can't produce it, so. But if you want to make it, go for it.
I'm just saying, I'd be happy to watch it.
I would be happy to watch.
Be an extra. At some point, Jamie Lee Curtis was in this movie, but her scene got deleted.
Really?
She was Buckaroo's mother. Dude, Jonathan Banks, bro.
Yeah, yeah. That's who I was trying to think of.
Yeah, Jonathan Banks.
I love seeing young Jonathan Banks in things lately.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know that was a thing for some reason.
Early Mike Ehrmantraut.
Yeah. Or Professor Hickey.
Yeah. But no, seeing him in this and then John Lithgow, like, just executes him. That really set the tone for me.
I know.
And he watched, he like walked with a hunchback and some weird fucking
was that
accent.
Tongue zappy thing that he put on to go back in time.
I've seen that shit. Like, I think that was something they like for like older executions, like electric shock therapy or something, like that copper wire almost that you stick on your tongue,
but it's like a mouthpiece. I would
it was like
fits
a,
in so they don't like
foam or bite their tongue maybe. Yeah, or I don't know, like I've seen it in other shit,
but like that one was, it was just like a like a fuzzy clamp. Yeah. He just clamps to his tongue and then
to get shocks fucking like 10,000 volts of electricity.
Shocks himself into a flashback. That was literally the point of that whole scene.
And then Jonathan Banks comes in and makes a comment about, I don't know how your TV bill is so high. Like, the power in this room is just insane. We're going to have to take your TV. He's like, I don't need it anymore. I got my flashback.
And my, what's the overthruster?
Yeah.
Fucking ending, right? He's telling John Big Boutte to put the his overthruster in. He's like, your overthruster is shit. Turns on him. Just so ridiculous. Like I said, I see, like, thinking about the shit that I retained from watching it, I feel like if I watch it again, I'd just be laughing and be like, what the fuck is happening? But I just wasn't in the mood for it, man.
Yeah, I think I was just trying to comprehend what I was watching. And now that I think back and like some of the scenes, I'm just, they were funny.
That
like,
car, that was a fucking Ford truck.
Yeah, with fucking like,
he drove a Ford
fucking
truck
wings on it. And captured like an alien brain in the process that he fucking just hit and runs. It's,
but it's like inside the car. It's like underneath
it's
the
underneath,
car.
Up, but
it's like
top.
Up in.
Yeah, like, and he knew exactly where the fuck it was. Like he just like went down and was like, ah, got it.
Well, he saw the drip, right? He had to check the drip.
Yeah, dude. He had that
he had oil leak.
He had that winter drip. movie was ridiculous.
Yeah, it really was.
It was.
I'm excited. I said this last week, I think. I'm excited for next week. I'm excited to just watch some new movies.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, Sayonara and Buckaroo Banzai
saved it for you.
And I didn't hate Dark Water. Like, I enjoyed watching it. But fucking Geostorm, The Protégé, Let's Be Evil, and Tao. Like, just, I'm going to have to go back through the thing, through the schedule. But, this might be my, like, worst week.
Wow.
Of just, I don't care about any of these fucking movies. Thank God for Sayonara.
Okay, I think, though, does that play into your life outside of movies?
I'm sure it
too?
Does. I'm sure it does.
Like, I mean,
there's a universe where I would have sat and actually enjoyed Geostorm, though.
No, never.
Or, honestly, The Protégé, because that's just the type of movie that I...
It's not your
I
cup of tea.
I just tend to... yeah, I don't know. They're just so...
And I'm sure if I had more time, I would be able to maybe even look at the relationship between like what's going on in my life versus how I react to movies and see if there's a parallel there of maybe if I had a journal of where I wrote down just my daily thoughts of be like, here's how I'm feeling on Monday.
Yeah.
Here's the shit that happened to
now
me on
Monday.
Now
we're fucking journaling? That's what we're doing here, bro.
Well, I know, but this is, like I said, it's...
I'm just kidding.
It's a little bit of a split between...
But yeah.
Movie watching and our experience of watching a movie a day. And I think there's plenty of people who have done this in the past. And they, you know, they'll write a little synopsis or something about the movie. But I think to get onto a podcast and to talk about it and to discuss it with another person takes it to a different level of
And difficulty. Sitting and talking about all seven at, you know, in one sitting, in one 2 hour recording session, right, of having to get your thoughts on these movies out, whether you want to talk about them or not, right? Yeah, I mean...
So I was going to say, for the people that I have seen, and this, again, this isn't anything new for people who have challenged themselves to watch a movie a day. I see Reddit threads in our movies about...
Oh, so we're not pioneers?
We're pioneers of the podcast. Nobody's doing this.
Son of a bitch.
But there are people, though, who will post the movies that they watch. They watch the movie a day for a year. Here are their thoughts on those movies, right? And at least in that sense, right, if a movie sucked and you didn't like it, you could have a 3-4 sentence about, yeah, I didn't like this movie. It, you know, like Let's Be Evil. Bad writing, bad this, bad that, yeah. And I don't suggest it. And that's it, right?
Done. Move on.
You move on. You're not sitting there trying to discuss it further.
Yep.
I think at some point, though, I think we'll be back on the uphill. I'm sure we could spend more time researching and picking out the movies that we want to watch, right? Yeah. And I think we could even go a step further to try to avoid stuff like Let's Be Evil. Like, if That's we were true. To pull up and watch the entirety of the trailer, go to IMDb and look at user reviews before even watching it, get a general understanding. And I think that would defeat, at least it, for That's me.
What, yeah, like, I agree.
I don't think they should all be winners. I don't think they should all be home runs. No. I think...
And when we try and pick the movies, you're right.
Feel like Samuel Jackson in The Protege, coughing up a lung.
Yeah, which never fucking came back.
That he had a cough?
It was a detail that he had coughed the whole movie and it didn't fucking matter ever.
Okay, it mattered.
Okay, he was willing to sacrifice himself.
It was essentially saying he was dying anyway. Yes, he was getting sick is what whatever. It meant. So he was trying to make amends.
He was going
to
do it anyway.
I know you didn't like the movie. I liked it, so.
I don't care. We're done talking about The Protege.
Worldwide. The Protege. But either way, I think we're gonna be on the uphill. I think January is just a tough month for a lot of people. Yeah. And I think you're coming off of the holiday season. You're back into more traditional work life. Things are starting to pick up again. I mean, even for me today, I think about my day today. I taught 3 hour-and-a-half blocks. I was grading during my other block. I went to coaching, and now I'm here doing a podcast. And I haven't been home for 14 hours. Busy days. But that's how it be.
That be how it be.
That be how it be.
That be how it is.
But no, I think this NetSuite's going to be good. My sister will be on next week.
Yes, excited for that.
She wanted to talk about and watch movies from the past 7 decades. So starting in the 1960s all the way up until the 2020s, we will be watching a film from each of those decades. And it should be fun to hear her input because she's quite the character. So Kerrigan, we're looking forward to having you on next week.
Yes, we are.
But that about wraps it up for today. Thank you for joining us on the NDNM podcast.
On the Indiana podcast.
Not the Indiana.
The NDNM podcast.
Hey, every now and then when I'm driving in the car, I might say, hey, Spotify, play New Day, New Movie podcast. And it plays. Nice. And that's nice. That's cool.
That is cool.
So for all of you out there who are wondering how to get our stuff to play, just say,
get your head through the door listening to
hey Google, hey Siri. Yeah, I do. You know what?
I'm just kidding.
One of us has to be optimistic and egotistical.
I don't listen to us because I have to fucking listen to us to edit.
Me and Sky are going to go fight.
We both hate our voices. So yeah, we're going to go duke it out. Have you?
Yeah.
God, how do you fit through the door?
Fucking ego. Sideways. Yo, bro, you got to... You big, but you could be bigger. Fit through door sideways.
Anyway, check out our schedule for each week. We upload with the upload of the episode of the podcast on Instagram and TikTok.
Yes.
And we will get back to a regular release schedule of Mondays. So there you have it.
Yeah, take care, everybody. Stay warm out there. And we'll catch you on the next one. Okay, bye. Bye.
Ow. Ow. Ouchies.
Yeah.
No. No, Daddy. Goodbye.